People seem to always be asking the question, if you were stranded on an island, what or who would you want to be stranded with? I might recommend Brigitte Mars, master herbalist, author, teacher, and speaker. And if she weren't available, it might be a good idea to go with one of her books, as it will undoubtedly lead you into a better understanding of yourself and your surroundings. We're lucky to have Brigitte in Boulder, so we get to continue our discussions somewhat regularly as she publishes new books. The Sexual Herbal is her latest. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Brigitte, with the addition of your latest book, The Sexual Herbal, your niche of herbalist is officially over and expanded into something else. I don't know. Is a notch a huge difference from a niche?
Well, I was thinking that maybe they could call me Dr. Root.
Dr. Root. Okay. Sounds good. We'll go with that for the next interview. But The Sexual Herbal was originally published as Sex, Love, and Health. And what's been changed, if anything? Maybe just publishers. I don't know.
Well, I did change publishers. This book, The Sexual Herbal, is with Inner Traditions and Bear & Company, a wonderful company out of Vermont. They do a lot of great books. And I feel like this is the book that I always wanted to do because the first book left out many important chapters. So The Sexual Herbal has a chapter on the fine art of flirting and finding a mate, dealing with infidelity, dealing with anger, keeping your love alive, sexual addiction, healing from sexual trauma. So I feel like I got to add in a lot of information because the emotional part wasn't covered as much in the first book.
And was that something that you just felt like there wasn't room for initially, or the publisher that you were working with didn't want that information? How did that come about?
Right. The first publisher wanted to keep it a certain size, and I feel like Inner Traditions has really let all my best dreams come true and include everything for a more holistic approach to sex, love, and health, even though we're calling it The Sexual Herbal. It's about a lot more than herbs.
Absolutely. And it's wonderful how someone like yourself can go down a path, for instance, with herbs that you've been studying and working with and living with for so long, and it's flipped you over into all of these other places. You know, someone may have a single track, so to speak, but you know, you could be up there with a lot of people doing homeopathy, for instance, and also Chinese medicine. All of this is brought into your book, and you've become expertise in these things as well.
Well, it is interesting to note that very often a person might have a health issue. Let's say they have extreme menstrual cramps, for example. But if we go to the emotional level, it's possible that being non-orgasmic or being sexually uptight or having had some kind of sexual trauma. So it's good to look at what's causing an ailment. And I have long been active in encouraging people not to use herbs allopathically. We don't want to just use herbs in place of a drug to mask symptoms. It's really important to get to the core heart of what's really going on and what our bodies are trying to tell us. So this book, as the first edition of the book, does have a lot of holistic gynecology as well. So someone might not be having great sex because they're having hot flashes. Get off of me. Oh, it's too hot. Or maybe they're concerned about prostatic inflammation. So this is a guide for both men and women so that we can learn to be our primary healthcare providers. And even though you may, of course, still get checkups and see your secondary or tertiary healthcare providers, but what can you do? How can you eat? Are there any herbal remedies you can do before you do a drug? And what emotional factors to look at so you are not just masking symptoms.
Right. And you've already answered most of the next question that I was going to ask you, but we can, I think, expound on it. As practitioners, we know that the most obvious presenting symptom is not always what needs all the attention or remedy. And in writing a book, how do you handle this? Do you refer different chapters, or how do you work with that in a book form?
Well, I tend to write books sort of patchwork. I lay down a foundation and then I go back in. And always, even from the days when I worked at Alfalfa's Market, you know, many years ago, I wasn't into just telling people, oh, you have a headache, take Feverfew. It was like, why do you think you have a headache? Have you looked at that maybe your vertebrae are out of alignment? Are you smelling toxic chemicals at work? Is there some kind of stress level? Are you eating foods you're allergic to? So a lot of this work is trying to enable people to be their own detective, to figure out what's really going on. And I follow an approach that I learned from my friend and teacher, Susan Weed. Believe it or not, we are dear friends, even though we have that YouTube debate, cooked food versus raw food.
But that's great.
But, you know, she talks about the wise woman tradition, where when we have a health condition, the first thing is to ask, what is this trying to tell me? And to be an observation, and then look at how does this enable me to live my life differently? So even though I might have a sexually transmitted disorder or have infertility issues or some issue, some blockage, terrible menstrual cramps, maybe this is a catalyst to get me to eat healthier, to take better care of the earth, to wear more comfortable clothes that don't block my upper chakras from my lower chakras, for example. And then we look at what can we do with food, what can we do with herbs, what can we do with vitamin supplements, because drugs and surgery are way down the list. Even though they might be what people need, there's many, many other factions or helpers that this planet provides that we can use. And even higher than that, we have energetic medicines like flower essences and homeopathy, even before we get to herbal remedies.
Right. And breath work is certainly one that falls into that category of energy medicines, even though most people or some people wouldn't actually think of it being that way.
Breath work, massage, exercise, yoga postures. So all of that is in the book. And it amazes me that people will spend so much time going to the gym and working on their triceps and biceps and gluteus maximuses. And yet when it comes to taking care of our reproductive health, very often that's something else that somebody else looks after. You know, when you go to the gynecologist, for example. And yet we do know that sales of adult diapers now outsell baby diapers. Shouldn't we want to know how we can prevent incontinence or uterine prolapse, so that we don't end up with our reproductive health being part of our demise?
Well, it certainly fits in with a lot of the ways our society has been instructed in a way, however subtly. I love how just a moment ago you brought up Susan Weed will ask the person to observe their life. And certainly that's, you know, a place where we always want to be, because if we can be in that observation mode, then we're not closing anything off. We're just looking at something from a much broader perspective, which does allow for a better knowing, regardless of what the topic is.
And it can also be good to look at what was going on in my life when this started happening. Sometimes that's a big issue. And you know, I'm also encouraging in this book some common things that we do that might not be so good for our reproductive system, such as I'm really trying to get women away from using tampons and internal protection during their menstrual cycle. And that's such a culturally accepted norm. And many women would say, ew, but I don't want to deal with, you know, blood or look at it or smell it. But yet we have this attitude that we need to plug ourselves up and wear tight white jeans and go horseback riding during our menstrual cycle. And yet we know that tampons are often made with cotton, which is one of the most heavily pesticided crops on the face of the earth. There's usually dioxin bleach. So, of course, you know, you can buy organic cotton and that's better. But I'm really trying to encourage people to embrace this aspect of one's life and learn more about it rather than try to plug it up and make it not and be something we have to deal with. And if we could heal our relationship with what our bodies are trying to tell us, that can be a very powerful step in having, you know, easier, more cramp-free cycles, for example.
Well, you brought up, and I think a nice side effect of using herbs is a more personal awareness of self that just kind of organically happens.
Yes. And so there's a couple exercises in the book called the deer, which come from the Taoist tradition, where you learn to actually move stagnant energy in your reproductive organs and for women in their breasts as well. And there's a version of the deer for women and men. And how wonderful to connect with that part of your body, check in, and know that this is really about you. It's not just about, oh, I need to look for the breast cancer today. It's that time of month. But to
I know,
really
hocus pocus, it's all where you focus, right?
But also to say, you know, I'm doing something to move stagnant energy, but for men to learn to do the deer, it can help them to be better lovers, to last longer for their partners, and also to prevent prostate problems, rather than it being a given, well, if you're over 40, you can expect to wake up five times a night, when really there are simple, loving things you can do for yourself to build tone and take care of this part of your being.
Yes. Can you describe perhaps the difference between the way a woman would do the deer and a man would do the deer, and sort of show?
Sure. There's pictures in the book, but basically the woman, and I learned this from a book called The Tao of Sexology by Stephen Chang. It's also in the Cultivating Male Sexual Energy and Cultivating Female Sexual Energy by Ma Tok Chia. And so for a woman, basically, she sits with her heel in her crotch, her heels up against her clitoris gently, and with warmed hands, she massages her breasts 36 times. If she'd like her breasts to get bigger, you go towards your heart. If you'd like them to get smaller, or if you have fibroids or painful breasts, not fibroids, breast cysts, go away from your heart, and then you do 36 Kegels, which are those pubococcygeus muscle contractions where you tighten and relax the muscles that control the flow of urine. And then she does that morning and night and is totally focused on doing that, not thinking about, you know, what's for breakfast, what am I going to wear. And then for men, they sit on the edge of a bed or a chair, and with one hand hold their testicles, and then massage 81 times an inch below the navel with one hand, and then switch hands, hold the testicles, massage 81 times in the opposite direction, and then do 81 Kegels or root lock exercises. So it's really quite simple. It doesn't cost anything. And it's also an exercise that's traditionally used to help you stay young longer, help you be more orgasmic, and clear up problems in the reproductive area for both men and women. What a wonderful thing.
Exactly. Can you share an example of something in your own personal history or something that a client did to make a big shift in their lives using, you know, one of your remedies? And not your remedies, but these remedies that certainly have been known about for quite some time.
Well, I'm always so delighted when someone comes to see me and they really want to have a baby and they've kind of exhausted all of the allopathic things, or they don't want to take that step yet. And by making some dietary changes, by using some herbs, by teaching them some exercises, they say, oh, months, you know, a year later, look, this is my son. I'm so grateful. And, you know, I didn't really do anything. I don't see myself as the healer. I see myself as educating people so that they can make the right decisions to make a difference. And it's just so amazing, and that's been very rewarding. Or someone who avoided having surgery because they tried some of these remedies. I know myself, when I was in my early 20s, I had a big lump in my breast, and I went to three different doctors, and they all said, you need to have it cut out, and then we can tell you if it's cancerous. This was in the early 70s, and I was able to make it go away using herbs and juice fasting and all kinds of cleansing things. It was a big deal, but it was also a victory early in my life to say, well, there is another way of doing it. And I had the surgery scheduled, but I was just going to give myself enough time to see if I couldn't make a difference. And so, you know, I'm always using myself and my family to experiment on. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that it's that much of an experiment, because when we tap into natural medicine, we're looking at things that millions of people have done for thousands of years. So it's often a real rich, this is really the traditional medicine. It's much more traditional than, say, having a hysterectomy. And granted, there are times when that's what people need to save their lives. I'm not against that. I just think that there's many other things to try.
Right. Well, hopefully, this information is coming out more and more and more all the time. So thank you for writing all of the books that you have. And I know you spend quite a bit of time traveling and educating many folks. I think you were able to, in your book, The Sexual Herbal, keep sex in a poetic light, even while you were discussing very clinical topics. And personally, I would love to hear an ancient Ayurvedic doctor talking about sex, for instance, because even the word penis is lingam, which means pillar of light. I mean, I think someone listening to this interview, just hearing that definition, could have a completely transformed sexual experience later today, you know, because of that in itself. And I'm wondering, during your research, did it lead you into some interesting or surprising ancient papers, and could you share some?
Well, when I started working on the book, I did explore the traditions of Tantra and studied with a lot of tantric teachers like Charles and Caroline Muir when they were teaching together, and Annie Sprinkle, author of many books, as well as Light and Brian Miller, Margot Anand. So it was really wonderful for my husband and I to go on this journey and say, you know, just even though we've been together for a number of years, there's still more to learn. You know, even though we often get these attitudes that, oh, I've been sexual since I was such and such an age, I already know it all, how wonderful that there's still more to explore. There's still more research. The G-spot, that, you know, massage techniques, semen retention, puja, all the things you learn in a tantric workshop that you can explore with your partner, how wonderful and enriching for your own life. So I was really grateful to have had that experience. And one of the things that's kind of basic Tantra 101 is to rename our genitals so they are terms of respect. Because very often what people call these parts of our body are swear words. You know, they're things you say when someone pulls out in front of you in traffic, and then that's what you say to your lover? Come on. So, you know, there's all kinds of ideas of renaming our sexual organs and, you know, acts of love, you know, sipping at the vast spring for, you know, cunnilingus, or playing the jade flute, or, like you said, you know, the wand of light, or the jade gate, or the watery lotus, you know. How beautiful. And it's really quite endearing. And rather than those terms, those old four-letter word terms.
Where did that happen? Where in history did that happen? Did you?
You know, I don't know. I do know, like, how some of those terms came to be, like, you know, what are you in jail for? For unlawful carnal knowledge. That's where that four-letter word came from, for unlawful carnal knowledge. Okay, so that goes back to Old England. But, you know, I think people have, for many years, grappled with sexuality, you know, trying to suppress it, and, oh, you know, what's right and what's wrong, and moral standards have changed depending on who was in power in the church and what the royal family was doing, and what was right for the king wasn't right for the common people. It's huge, and it takes up a lot of energy. So I really kind of came into this with a clean slate of, like, you know, all our chakras should be in working order. It's not like above the waist, that's all good, below the waist, So they all need to be in good working order, and I think that can even contribute to higher consciousness. I have a line in the book that says, you know, world peace begins in the bedroom. And, you know, how often have we joked about how it's often people in power wanting to have bigger missiles than your missile. And yet we just have to find ways, if we could just be happier. And if you want to do something nice for your children, love your partner more. Even if it might not be the original partner you started with. I mean, after all, things have changed a lot My husband, Tom, likes to say it used to be that parents had a lot of kids. Now kids are apt to have a lot of parents.
That's very true.
But how wonderful, no matter what the idea, no matter how it turns out, for children to grow up in an atmosphere of love and compassion and whoever's in their life to really care for them. And if it's the same two parents, that's great.
Right. Yes, I agree. That's a great thing to say. When you wrote the book, it's very obvious that it's a direct extension of who you are, Brigitte. And I think here, as you were just saying, there is no normal when it comes to sexual behavior. It's gone through a lot of morals and taboos and what's accepted and isn't accepted. And yet, do you see there's a place where where you might draw the line on healthy sex? For instance, the porn industry, from where it started and to what it is today, has just gotten more and more off in these various directions. And that's probably because our neurotransmitters need more stimulation in order to be affected. So, you know, here we have sex moving into an almost chemical realm, not an almost, but definitely a chemical realm. And so how would you define healthy sex?
Well, I like to apply high principles to everything in life. And just like, you know, I would encourage people to take the high road, whatever that means to a person, like, you know, what products am I going to buy? Is this supporting a greener planet? What foods am I going to buy? Is this something that's causing harm? And even though we see so much sex in movies and in the media, you know, is this something that's in the long run going to be of benefit? Is this going to be harmful? Is this something that is really capable of creating a cosmic experience? And yet in the movies, we often see people making choices and people being governed by sex. And just like I would hope that people would be disciplined and say, you know, no, I'm not going to eat that. That's not really the right thing for my body or for the planet, to take sex to those levels as well. And I remember Michio Kushi, the great macrobiotic teacher, used to say that people's diets are so polluting that they need such excessive stimulation in order to feel anything, because mm-hmm. they're constantly being bartered by, you know, the intensity of foods that are clogging their arteries, so they're not really feeling. For me, it's all about the pursuit of truth, beauty, and goodness, and trying to bring sex into that realm, that this can also be part of truth, beauty, and goodness.
How heavily do you see nutrition playing a part in a person's sexuality?
Well, sexual energy is extra energy. So if we're exhausted, if we're depleted, one of the first things to go is really our sexual libido, because our bodies go into a protection mode, like knowing that if you created a baby right now, that would just be the demise of your health. So to be in good health, to have good circulation, erectile dysfunction, for example, we constantly are seeing ads on the TV, how to correct ED, and yet we are also needing to look at that if the blood is not getting to the genitals, there's not going to be the ability to have an erection. So that we want to have clean arteries for optimal arousal. And if we're in good health, if we like the way our bodies look, if we have good self-esteem about our bodies, it's a lot easier to, you know, be seen by your lover and feel good about it and not needing to be hiding in the dark, for example. So good nutrition is going to help us to have good sex, because we're going to be energized. And it doesn't necessarily have to be really unusual foods. It could be, you know, in my chapter on sexual nutrition, I talk about raw nuts and seeds, avocados, or root vegetables. I talk about colorful fresh fruits and vegetables. Lots on nuts and seeds. I'm really big these days on chia seeds, because they're a black food. Also in Asian medicine, the health of our kidneys has a lot to do with sexual vitality. The kidneys govern the bones, the teeth, the hair on the head, the sense of hearing, as well as libido. So I do bring a lot into my background of Asian medicine, of how we need to eat a wide variety of flavors, how sea vegetables can nourish the thyroid, And that's really fun because that's a simple thing we can do. And when someone says, you know, my libido's just not the way it was 10 years ago, that can be part of life too, when we're not really being biologically prodded to reproduce our, it gets more about quality rather than quantity.
What are the chia seeds for? What do you use them for? What is their history?
Well, chia seeds are a Native American food. They're native to both the American Southwest and Central America. They're a black food. So in Asian medicine, black foods indicate the presence of a lot of minerals. So they're good for the kidneys. They are mucilaginous. So when you soak them, they have this slippery quality, which is actually very lubricating to the sexual fluids of the body. And they're high in nutrients, vitamin E and zinc, which are also very important to our sexual fluids. And so I've been so into chia seeds. And I know there's a white and black, but I'm just using the black ones because I know that there's got to be some extra thing in there, even though if it's might not be discovered yet. But I just soak the seeds overnight, and then in the morning, just add chopped apples and raisins and honey, or I put violets and mangoes in it the other day. So I love to put edible flowers in it. So that becomes a breakfast cereal, or it could also be a dessert. You could put raw cacao nibs and sunflower seeds and, you know, pumpkin seeds in there, all of which are great for sexual vitality. So that is an amazing superfood. It's also high in omega-3 fatty acids.
Well, flax does a similar thing, doesn't it?
And, it does.
I know one of my favorite doctors on the East Coast, Dr. Majid Ali, says that he just soaks his flax seeds, like you were just talking about, with a chia, and he drinks the water. Mm-hmm. And he feels like he doesn't need to get flax oil, because by soaking the seeds, the oil starts coming out, and then he drinks the water and eats the seeds, and he's good to go.
And if you were to throw those flax seeds or chia seeds, any, you know, leftover out in the yard, it could sprout into thousands of plants. I mean, there's so much life force in there.
Is there an herb of choice for libido enhancement, or is that too broad?
Well, there's a lot of herbs. I mean, a simple place to start is use more spices in your food. Cinnamon, ginger, cardamom, garlic, onions, anything that improves circulation and warms the body tends to help people feel more in their body. But I also have a few herbs that I like a lot. Maca, for example, which is native to South America. It's a member of the cruciferous family, so it's actually a relative of rutabaga and turnip. And I like to use maca as a food where you can just put a tablespoon of maca powder in a smoothie, or I've made maca flavored hemp ice cream, for example, and it has a nice butterscotchy taste. There's a very popular herb called epimedium, also known as horny goat weed. And one of the advantages of the sexual herbal is you can actually go in a natural food store and look at the shelf that they'll have reserved of sexual enhancement herbal products and look up and like, is everything in here safe? Is this an herb that's okay to use if I have, for example, have high blood pressure or depression or insomnia? So I really want people to understand the herbs that are being marketed for sexual vitality and pick out the formula that might be best for them. You see a lot of yohimbe marketed, and yohimbe is an herb from Africa, and it's contraindicated for a lot of things, high blood pressure, insomnia, people who are on using alcohol or recreational drugs, people who have kidney and liver disease don't want to use yohimbe. And yet, when you buy a product at the health food store, there might not be room on the bottle to list the contraindications. But maca, I feel like totally comfortable about.
Brigitte, thank you so much.
Thank you. Many blessings, Robin.
Brigitte Mars' latest book is The Sexual Herbal. She can be found at brigittemars.com. And for any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.org. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.